I do like to say, first time teaching adult class here, that I'm not a big lecturer. Definitely solicit input. We'll ask them a couple questions here in a few moments. I think a teacher is definitely someone hopefully is prepared, but it's just guiding us all, right? We're guiding one another. Same thing with the song leader. I don't think a song leader is necessarily in charge of the service, but they're guiding our service to keep us moving. So long as we don't go down too many rabbit trails, hopefully we can get some input from everybody this morning. Mentioned that I am the resurrection and the life of this chapter, John chapter 11, the first 27 verses. That's really going to be the main point in the theme. This is the fifth I am, and we'll look at all seven of them later on this morning that are in the book of John. But this is the fifth I am, and this one is I am the resurrection and the life. The time and place of these events, a little bit of an introduction, like I said, we're going to mention to kind of get our feet wet at what we're doing and where we're at from a time point. Jesus is in the process of his second tour through the cities of Perea. It's several weeks after the Feast of Dedication, which occurred in December. It is also just a short time before the Feast of the Passover, after which is over usually in April. This is also possibly in the area where John the Baptist was. And actually where John was first baptized, I should say. Jesus is called to the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus at Bethany. Bethany is about 2 miles outside of Jerusalem, and Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were Jesus often stayed while he's in Jerusalem. So there's one of the first points right there where this is, there's a connection here, right? There's somebody here who he knows. This isn't someone who he's healing. There's a connection. There's a relationship. They already have something in common. They know one another. As we kind of go on through this setting, we look at, they definitely seem to have a special friendship with Jesus. We're going to talk about John 11:35 here in a little bit, and kind of the significance of one of the shortest verses in the Bible. And this chapter opens up with Jesus, like I said, in one of the cities in Perea. The family here, Mary and Martha. Mary indicates that she's probably the older of the two women. She seems to have felt responsible for house and other things, and I think we're real familiar with that story. Mary is possibly the younger of the two women. She was definitely interested in Jesus' teaching. She's very emotional, had a hard time dealing with the loss of her brother. She's the one who anointed Jesus' feet with expensive ointment. So hopefully this kind of sets the stage for us, gives us an idea of where we're at, who we're talking about in the time period. So we're somewhere probably January, February, you know, March type time period, okay? And we had an idea where we're at and who we're talking to, and a little bit, hopefully a little bit, what the points that we're going to try to cover and prove this morning. Lazarus could have been the youngest of the three. Their father and mother are not mentioned. They may not have been living at this time. We don't know. He was sick, possibly with a high fever, which ended in death. And Jesus' love for them, definitely a special relationship with them, as we just noted. He did also had this also relationship with some of his other disciples, with some more than others. We're not really sure why such a strong attachment, but it was definitely there. And the miracle that comes into place here, it definitely changes the intensity later, as we know, it leads up to his crucifixion, John chapter 19. So hopefully just take all that in for a moment, if you would, and think about the I am, we'll head to in a moment. Think about the relationship that they have going on here. And then also, like I said, think about the relationships that we have with one another, and we're going to try to apply that and put all that together here a little bit. Three main points of raising of Lazarus in these first 30, 40 verses. First is the sign of Jesus, the Son of God. He'd had the feeding of the 5,000. He'd healed the blind man. Second point is Jesus is the Messiah, and it really who Jesus Christ is, and that he was dying for his people. And finally, that Jesus Christ was to die. And that after this place takes place towards the end of this chapter, which I don't think we'll get to today, Jack said get as far as I could, so I guess I could stop now. But it really, at the end, it shows the intensity, okay? They're really ramping things up. This is a real pinnacle point to where, hey, this guy is serious. He's not going away, right? We need to do something about it. I'm getting nervous. There's a lot more pride coming with the Sanhedrin. and they're taking note. This isn't someone over here doing a couple of miracles and then he's gone. They're concerned about their position. They're concerned about their control. Again, towards the end of this chapter, there's more talk about that. And into chapter 12, of course, it really starts to shift in the seriousness. And we're going to talk here in a moment about where the apostles are at. They're concerned. They're going to tell Jesus, wait a minute, there's people after you. We're not going back over there. I know you like this guy, but I'm not going back. I'm concerned, okay? Gospel of belief, this first PowerPoint slide here. Let's start off with that. John chapter 20, 33:1, I think it's just important to note, therefore many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Okay, let's look over John chapter 11 now, the first couple of verses, the first three verses particularly, and some of the summarizing and discussion, the introduction that I just mentioned has a little bit to do with these first couple of verses. But let's go ahead and read those now. Verse 16 is specifically about the death, and then later we'll get more into, of course, the resurrection. I shouldn't say the resurrection. Resuscitating of Lazarus is definitely a difference between bringing someone back to life and resuscitating them in a resurrection. We'll get to that in a minute. But the death of Lazarus first, the first 16 verses. Okay? Most of the PowerPoint's really going to be the text. I'll try to keep it correlating with my notes and where I'm at. Verse 1, it says, now when a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was at Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. Okay? Jesus isn't with them. Send a message. So we start thinking about time periods here, okay? Start thinking about a couple days. Start thinking about how quick we get information now, right? If I want to let Annelle know something, I can let her know immediately with a text or an email or a phone call. Some people still make a phone call, right? But this is going to take some time to get a message to them. So be thinking about that when we start talking about 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. Why 4 days? What is the significance to that? Is there significance to that, or was it just that's how long it took to get a message to somebody? Hopefully we can see several different points for the reason for the time period that passes by here in a moment. So Mary, her sister Martha, her brother's Lazarus. Jesus had a close relationship with his family, as we've said already. It was expected that maybe his miraculous ability would meet the needs of so many others, then maybe why wouldn't it also meet the needs of those who he had a special relationship with? So maybe you can start thinking maybe a little presuppositional thought on some people's parts, possibly. I read a little bit about that. I'm not sure I'm a supporter of that completely, but possibly, right? It's maybe a logical conclusion a little bit. Second item in these first couple of verses, I think it's important to note that Jesus, the God, behold, whom you love, is sick, okay? They do not state their request. They don't make a demand. But they don't need to, really, because where there is a true bond of love, there's really no need to request a favor. Hopefully it's just enough to make it be known. And that's why I was saying just a moment ago, isn't it nice when we have a relationship with someone so much that we know there's a need and you voice it to me and I say, hey, you mentioned the other day that you needed some help. Can I help you with that? If you have a little bit of a foundation, sometimes you're willing to do that. And they're not proposing or putting on their will at this point by any means by saying, hey, can you do this? Would you do this? Can you do this? They're solely leading up to, hey, the person who you love is sick. And they don't get real specific of what they want him to do right at this point. They don't have to ask. Hopefully, they're going to see if Christ offers and what takes place shortly thereafter. And I think there's just a really good personal application there sometimes. Any comments so far? Okay. 4 through 6, we're going to talk about that pop out here in just a moment, about shows love for one another. Just a second. Let's read these next couple of verses. It says, when Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. We're going to talk about glorified through it here in just a moment, and the miracle that we're going to get into in a few moments. But just hold that note for a moment, if you would. The sickness is not unto death. What does that mean? Any ideas?
Dave? Well, it's not unto death in that he will live again, obviously, is implied. But I think, too, that, you know, obviously Jesus is going to show this great miracle to glorify, to show glory to him, that the Father's going to glorify his Son, Jesus, and by doing this. And so in that sense, the sickness is not... not to end in death. He's giving an indication of what he's going to do.
Okay. Yeah, Lazarus was probably already dead by the time this message got to Jesus, but Jesus knew that the end result of this would, of course, glorify God, not to a physical death.
Well, and I think with that, Jeff, he indicates that he stayed 2 more days.
Okay, that's...
And those 2 more days that he stayed was obviously to allow what was to transpire to take place, and the grieving process that was then going on, mm-hmm. that would bring this situation to show that it was truly a miracle that was being performed, number one, and to deal with the grief that was going on, and so Jesus would truly be glorified.
Okay. All right. Anything else on that, this point, just right here? Marvin? Okay.
The following words are about to be glorified by God, the Son of God may be glorified by God. That, to me, indicates there's some spiritual aspect of not a physical death.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's just a thought I have.
Okay. We'll keep moving through some of that and continue to massage in some of that more, because I think there's definitely some of that. Anne? Right. Yeah, I think that's an excellent comment. Okay. All right, good. Good. Like I said, I'm trying to guide the class. I don't like to lecture. I want to hear everybody's input. And then take that and, of course, make sure we have an end conclusion for an end result that is unified and conclusive and helpful. Okay? Continue to work through pretty much 6 through 10 a little bit more together. Talking about these comments now, thinking about the end result, thinking about how it's going to glorify God. He stayed 2 more days. Some of you just mentioned John here. There are 3 other times when someone near and dear to Jesus makes a request to him. 2 was his mother and his brothers, actually, on the way to Jerusalem. And in each of these 3 cases, Jesus responds in the same way. Okay, he first refuses to grant the request. Then he is fulfilled it after asserting that he does things according to the timing and the will of God, not man, not by demand, right? He's not going around doing tricks. Do this, do that. Okay, here you go. There's a purpose for the miracles, in other words. There's a significant purpose in this miracle, as there is all of them. And we're going to talk a little more about that in a minute, about this one and about Christ's death a little bit also. But through his actions, Jesus demonstrates that this delay was not necessarily in denial, but it would actually be more glorified to God. And as I was just mentioned just a little bit, how so? How's it going to be more glory to God? So you're told someone's sick. I hear Brad is sick. I say, hey, that's great. I'm sorry to hear that. Send this message back. I'm going to wait a couple more days before I leave. Wait. I thought you just heard that Brad wasn't doing well, okay? He's waiting for lots of reasons. He knows the end results, okay? But there's definitely not just a communication factor by travel time taking place here, why it takes him 3 to 4 days to get to Lazarus, but there's also a significant purpose behind that of what he's trying to lay out to make sure that there's no mistake, hopefully, and we know there still are doubters, but what he really does wasn't just, well, he was only dead for a couple hours. Or would it be less significant to heal someone from having a high fever opposed to raising someone from the dead who'd been known to be dead in a tomb, in a cavern, lay away, wrapped up for 4 days, now I show up and raise you, okay? Can I see that, Marvin? Okay, great. Okay. 7 through 10, Jesus, again, decides, the courageousness continues to build. He's trying to set that as a leader and help the others around him to join up to go into Judea and Jerusalem. It says, then after he had said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again, the disciples said unto him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and you are going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of the world. But if one walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. Okay, let us go to Judea again. Wow, people don't like me. I want to go back there. Okay, again, he's building up those around him to give them the comfort and peace. And the apostles are really trying to bring them along. Okay? Leadership isn't a position. Okay? It's taking people's abilities and ideas and applying them and making them real. Everyone in here is a leader. We all lead somebody. We all influence somebody. Yes, there are specific leadership positions, secular and professional, if you will, spiritual. However, okay, Jesus isn't writing in, again, at this time, in an elaborate king leadership way, okay? He's with mostly a bunch of fishermen and physicians, some others, occupation, but trying to take a course of extreme humbleness, to say the least, as we know. Jesus could have raised Lazarus from a distance, but Jesus was willing to go to Judea and minister to Lazarus and his family, even though, of course, it was dangerous. And he's, again, trying to bring those around him to have that positive outlook and that perspective. Hey, wait a minute, who are you with here? I know what I'm doing, let's go, okay? As they go there, Jesus walked into the confidence of someone who really trusts God, knows God, and is God. So there are not 12 hours in the day. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that comment or on anyone walks in the day that does not stumble. Real quick note, unless there's a comment on it, there's a couple takes on the 12 hours. Some talk about the allotted time that was given by his father. I've read, you know, again, the Jewish time day changed and was stretched and was able to be different, if you will. And he's saying, hey, you got the same amount of time. I got the same amount of time. Let's be careful. Let's be smart. We'll do this in peace. We'll do this in a way that we can go about it in a safe way. And there's a couple different ways to interpret those two points. But the main ones that I came and I saw and I understand to know was mostly the allotted time by the Father for Jesus to do his earthly ministry in the Perean ministry, and then also about the hours that could actually be stretched that they used them. Brad.
It's just average, but geographically, first of all, or the name, that geographic doors, that's basically what there was every day.
Okay.
I mean, here at our higher latitude, it varies more. That being said, he had a certain time, as you said, to do his work. As the previous I am statement said, I am the light of the world. He's referring to himself at the start of the day, or daylight, it is daylight. I am here with you. We're not going to stumble. I'm the light. I'm the sun. We're going to see fine. There's no stumbling. There's nothing when you're mentioning bad going to happen. They should have known this already, that the stoning doesn't make a difference, because time after time, when they went to stone him, he just, because the time was not right, he just sort of disappeared, went away. They couldn't find them.
Okay.
The disciples should have known this.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's hitting on their lack, a little bit of lack of faith here again, gently,
yep.
But.
I agree.
It's 12 hours a day, I'm here.
Okay.
Don't worry, we're going, we're not going to, there's no stumblings going on, I'm polite.
Okay, yeah, I like it. Dave.
I love verse 8 because here he's showing them the importance of getting out of your comfort zone. Because here the disciples said, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again? Because our human philosophy would say, why would you put yourself in harm's way?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus is showing them that you're going to be put in situations, but he will be there to bring you out of those situations. So go in with that confidence in putting your trust in him, and he'll get you through those situations, but you got to go.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's, I like that point. I've got a few notes somewhat down that line, but what I want to stop and recognize there is that's one of those things I think we can very easily pass over.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a miracle. Lazarus is raised. This is the fifth I am. He had a relationship. Jesus wept. Lots of highlights and common things and themes that we want to hit on that are not to be ignored. But points like that, and the relationships, and the things that they're building here upon, and making that that application, right? I mean, we've all studied this chapter before, I'm sure, as I mentioned when we started. But what can we learn out of today that we can make it real and make it an application for ourselves, right? I'm gonna keep going about 9 through about 13 here. These things he says, and after he had said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. Then the disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, will he get well? However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Okay, that's pretty frank. You're not getting it yet. I'm just going to come out and say, hey, he's dead. Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him. This is where we kind of start off a few minutes ago. Right now, hopefully we're starting to bring it all together, getting a couple more chapters in the book and saying, okay, now we see here what's going on a little bit more. That's why I kind of wanted to start with the end in mind, and that was the introduction to kind of help us know where we're headed. And just to refamiliarize ourselves, if we hadn't looked at this chapter in a while, of what's going on here, what things are about. And he's slowly bringing them along. Now he's going to say, he's not asleep in a physical way. Lazarus is dead, and that he is glad. Jesus could be glad, even though in the death of this friend, because he knew he was certain of the outcome. Okay, same thing for us. Or is it? Do we have that peace? Again, thinking yesterday was a memorial service, thinking about the peace that we can have when someone has stayed steadfast their entire life. We can celebrate their life. We don't have to be happy that someone's passed, if you will, but we sure can be happy, right? If we know they stayed the course, stayed steadfast, and they've only died here physically. But once again, they will be with those believers in Christ in heaven again. Wayne.
Jeff, allow me to slip in just a kind of a side thought. I'm trying to connect some dots here. And listening to this, I think I've got there. It's amazing that it's said that Jesus loved Lazarus. I start thinking, how much did he love? Well, if you race to the end, Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin Council looked at this crowd that was following after Jesus, and that was their decision to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they found Judas as a means to do it, but they made their decision to kill Jesus based upon the crowd that was going, this guy raised Lazarus. And I'm wondering if Jesus was aware, as a God, as a man, that physically there. And if he was aware of that, that's a whole lot of love.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. I do a lot of review work, report work, quality control work, and I always begin at the end. And some real popular self-help books out there talk about that a lot too, begin with the end in mind. That's what you're saying, and I appreciate that, because when we can see where they're going and where they're headed and where it ends, you kind of can start backfilling things, and you can kind of see, okay, that's how they got there, and that's how they got there, and you start collecting those dots. Completely agree with that. Absolutely, I think he knew this was leading up to. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a couple more verses. And the last 10 verses of this chapter definitely bring all those dots together, in my opinion. Okay? Good. So we have Lazarus is dead. He comes out and says it. He's real significant miracle that we're going to get into in just a moment. I just want to note, taking the rest and sleep. This is not a new phrase from Genesis chapter 47 about Jacob sleeping. Matthew, it's used again. Acts 13:36, it says David served his generation and then fell asleep. Okay, it's a term of sleeping, being dead physically, but sleeping for a moment until we're with Christ again in heaven. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Thomas and continue on here. Let's get another slide up there. Okay, there we go. There's a little pop out that just kind of reiterates in 1 Thessalonians another use of the similar root word of asleep. Okay? Keep going down here. Then Thomas, who called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, Let us also go that we may die with him. Who's him?
Jesus.
Okay. Pretty quick answer there. He's not talking about let's die with him with Lazarus, is he? He's not talking let's die with him.
He thinks they're going to stop.
Okay.
And he goes.
Right, right. So is this pretty courageous of Thomas, you think? A lot of faith?
No.
No? Okay.
But it shows courage.
Okay.
A lot of courage.
Okay. So maybe courage is a better word than faith.
He had courage, even though later he said he wasn't going to believe that Jesus rose from the dead.
Okay. I originally, and for many years, and re-looking at this again this week, I immediately thought, wow, there's Thomas. He's not doubting. He's got faith. He's ready to go. I'm going to die for you. Devotion? Yeah. And then I kind of back up to what you just said. Okay, wait a minute. And what Gary was just saying. It's courage. Yeah. He's ready to go, but he thinks they're going to die. He has just enough faith to say, I'll go with you, but not quite enough to know that I'm comfortable with the outcome or that I have confidence that we're going to live. I'll go with you and die with you. Makes me think of Peter later with the crucifixion and being just close enough, but yet standing afar. He had a lot of faith, but when it really came down to it, he stayed just far enough away to not quite be in the mix to get in trouble. Brad?
He's more resigned to a fate. I really hope this is going to happen, but might as well go along and be done with it, because that's the impression I'm getting.
Okay.
I don't know if it's that they could be heard, but I've seen people just even on taking tests, kind of fail, might as well just get it done with and go get it over with.
Okay. We're going to die anyways. Might as well die this week. Something like that?
Possibility.
Okay. All right. This is, that's proof. The first 16 verses, 17 through 37. See if we can at least get through this section here quickly. The resurrection and the life. We started off with talking about this a little bit. This is the fifth I am. And John 17 through 19. I'm going to read about through 22. It says, so when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. And now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles, and many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Then Martha said to Jesus, Lord, you had been here, my brother would have not died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. He had already been in the tomb 4 days. We talked about this a few minutes ago. Let's talk a little bit more about it now and the significance, and I think a couple of bit more applications about it. Why did he wait 4 days? We've talked a little bit about the journey. We've talked a little bit about the time. We've talked a little about the significance, okay, making sure, hey, this person has been in there a while. There's no question. He just didn't pass away. I'm going to do CPR. He's been dead for 4 days. Jesus does this in the light of the Jewish superstition also, I read. That in that day, some had said that the soul stays near the grave for up to 3 days, hoping that the soul would return to the body. Therefore, it was accepted that after 4 days, there was absolutely no hope of the resuscitation. They call it the rabbinical tradition, I think is right. Close enough. Superstition, not scripture. I'll be real clear. Okay, there's nothing in God's word that talks about that. But as you start reading different, theologians, that's a good way. Other quote experts, as they may think, and some are really good. But just one more little thing to note. Okay, I think it's kind of interesting to note those things, but be careful with them and be sure that we know it's not in the scripture. But it's just one more thing that Jesus possibly knew about, that they knew that some had believed that the soul could wait around for 3 days. Another interesting point about the fourth day. Michelle?
Did you happen to pick up on Jewish tradition about when they perceived someone to be dead before they actually put them in the tomb?
I had read 1 day. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. They buried
Jesus like right away. Preservation of the body and decomposing was not near as advanced as the Egyptians and with decomposing and embalming of that time. The embalming's been around forever. But these folks didn't necessarily have the abilities, the time, the resources to do it like the Egyptians already were. Brad? Okay.
And that's where the tradition of a wake came from.
Right.
They would set the body out and everybody's gathered to see if he really was dead, or of course there was food and all that. And so that's where our common practice of wakes.
Yeah, yeah. And in the wakes there's still going to be some preservation already done and such.
The other thing I was looking at here is Mary and Martha. Mary and Martha are staying true to character. When you go back to Luke 10, might be the initial visit to their village, and Jesus stays at their house. Could be the initial one. I'm not sure. This is the time when Jesus is teaching, and Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet, and Martha comes complaining to Jesus, "Make my sister get up and help me."
Okay. Yeah.
Now, who is it that's coming? Who knows the positions of Mary and Martha here? Mary is waiting in the village. She remains seated in the house, waiting for Jesus.
Yeah, it was just.
And Martha's the one that goes out and says, "Jesus, you should have been."
I'm just going to touch on. Yeah, I know we read through that, and let's hit on that a little bit more. Absolutely, Brad. And on that, it says, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would have died." Martha plainly states the disappointment in Jesus with some take with the late arrival, and even if she doesn't show total confidence at this point, she's definitely being honest, and she's again trying to build up her faith and again she states his will, not her. She doesn't say you could have saved or would you save him or would you bring him back to life, even though whatever you ask of God, God will give you. That's about as clear as she really asked for something. Martha isn't confident that Jesus will raise her brother. However, I did note that rather she is still believes in him, absolutely, despite any kind of disappointment. And real quick, our own application, can we say the same thing? Do we pray? Do we have situations that we're disappointed in? And can we still stay the course? So can we still stay steadfast? Can we still stay on target? Do we still have the same perspective? Do we still have the same vision? Even though we're disappointed with something. Why did that person have to leave this life so early? Is that hard? Yeah, it's hard. Okay? I think we all can identify with different adversity and, of course, tragedy in our lives. That we can just say, okay, take a deep breath and I can get through this with Christ. But yes, Mary runs, or Martha is out there first. Mary's back. 20 and 22. Try to get a little bit farther here. 23 and 24. Okay. 23 to 27, it says, Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Jesus." She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into this world." I am the resurrection and the life is what we started talking about. This is one of the really pinnacle points here in the middle of this chapter with this statement that Jesus is really trying to overthrow the agony of death that man has known about since the beginning of time. Is trying to really work through this with them. And I think some of this starts to get into laying a foundation to what's going to happen later with his death, which is what I think Wayne a little bit was mentioning. There are different philosophers out there that continue to talk about those two parallels. We're not going to take the time to get into all of them now this morning, but there's definitely a little bit of dilemma here with people trying to still work through death and how to go about that. And Christ, I believe, and I suppose I can throw this out there as kind of just a personal thing, a little back with what Wayne was talking about, and that was, I think Christ knows this is some of the similar agony that some of these people are going to experience when he's gone, when he's dead, okay? I want to get to at least verse 35 here. It says, "He who believes in him, though he may die, he shall live." Jesus, again, is trying to overcome and be triumphant with death and use it in a way that can be advantageous in a learning situation as he gets up to this miracle. Those who are fearing death to help continue to make them to be believers, strong believers, or turn those who are non-believers to become believers for the first time in their life. I think a lot about this big claim that Jesus here says that I am the resurrection and the life, that he who believes in him will not die, but shall live. God, of course, possibly is the only person that can say such a thing. We need to believe this, okay? Do we believe this, in other words? Jesus challenges Martha not to debate some of these other things, but to just truly believe. He doesn't need Mary and Martha to completely believe to do the miracle, but he wants them to, okay? If he's getting ready to do this, he wants to continue to just build with what's going on at that moment. And there's some more grieving that takes place here in just a moment. We might get to, I guess, into the I am. Okay. And he says, when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, "The teacher had come and is calling for you." As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. The Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, "She is going to the tomb to weep there." Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you have been here, my brother would not have died. Lazarus had..." Mary and Martha is two sisters. Martha had already spoken to Jesus regarding the death of Lazarus, but now Mary speaks for the first time, and her words are very similar to what Martha said by starting off by saying, "If you had been here, he wouldn't have died." Okay? Goes on to say that with the brother would not have died. This is one of the places in the Bible where you kind of just wish you could hear the tone of the voice or the expressions on the face. We talk about communication today with texting and email and social media. It does not give near the same vibe. It can be very misconstrued, misinterpreted, misapplied, misjudged, and saying that Jesus was here having no doubt that he could have healed Lazarus, okay? But on the other hand, can be also be seen as criticism. So they both said, I wish you would have been here, you wouldn't have died, but they still both show respect. Martha, by saying, what you ask of God is your will. Mary is one who shows a lot of other respect by, of course, wiping his feet with a special ointment. So there's still a lot of respect here, but they both start off with some of the similar greeting, if you will, when he meets Jesus on the edge of town. I'm about out of time, so I just wanted to race through that and just at least get to that point. And you may be stuck with me next week now that I'm supposed to probably get a little bit farther because we haven't got to the best part. That's okay. Just in that note, be thinking about, regardless of what's picked up next week, with this miracle that's about to happen, the significance of it and the relationships of it, and John 11:35 about Jesus wept and what that word really means. It's the only time that word is used in that true root word. It's not the same as weeping and wailing. Wept is a little bit different. And him showing humanity, him showing the man he was, but yet the perfect man in this setting. Great. We.